Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting in what you say. Today is the day. Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. This is hour two for the 28th of January, where apparently, Paul Perreault, we are going to be broadcasting live all week from the Arctic Circle, given what the weather patterns look like. It is. It's been a while, I've got to say. I know that you and I talked at the top of hour one a bit, too, but I sort of bemoan the fact that we don't have the winters of my youth, and maybe I don't remember my youth terribly well, but this sure feels like a winter of my youth.
This is definitely one of those winters you remember, because we've had some cold ones here in the Twin Cities. This is going to be competing in that worst of area, because we're based out of the Twin Cities, the upper Midwest, getting hit pretty hard, but not cold enough.
Not cold enough.
No, the Vikings still aren't in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's really true. This would have been one of those moments where Bud Grant, the old Minnesota Vikings coach, probably some of our listeners remember him, he would have still stepped outside in minus 45-degree wind chill in those short-sleeve shirts. He wouldn't have mess with the Purple People Eaters.
Don't mess with Bud.
Absolutely. So Fargo, though, it sounds like is going to maybe get some of the worst of it in terms of, am I hearing correctly, it's 55, 60 degrees below zero wind chill in some parts of our listening audience?
Yes. You get something in the Fargo area because of the valley. Little science for you. That's something called the Venturi effect.
I don't know what this is. Tell me about it.
Well, okay. Quick description. You've had a garden hose where you put your finger at the end and the water sprays faster.
I do. It's an exciting moment. Yeah.
Same thing happens with the valley. The way it's the Red River Valley kind of acts like a funnel or a little inhibitor and causes the wind, what's already blowing fast, to blow even faster through the valley. So that's where you get that Venturi effect. So you get the higher wind chills, higher winds in the valley. I lived there for 6 years. I know this.
So
it's cold.
Was it ever sort of one of these challenges where you'd go down and you just say, if you're going to want to be in the coldest spot in the United States, this effect would happen here and it would just exacerbate how cold it might be?
Yeah. Now, mind you, I was just talking with one of the people within our Northwestern media organization who works for our station in Omaha doing the news and traffic there, and they have a high wind warning, 70-mile-an-hour gusts.
Yikes. Wow. Yeah, you can see it all over the country. It certainly is going to be really cold. We'll be following all week with you here on Faith Radio Mornings. It's not going to get any better over the next couple of days, but thanks for staying top of the mind and even educating us a little bit this morning about some of the scientific meteorology that you know.
Blinded you with science.
I love it. Well, up next here on Faith Radio Mornings, we'll be joined by one of our favorite guests as well, Karen Swallow Pryor, who does such great work just analyzing the difference and sort of the synergy between the political sphere and our Kingdom of God sphere. And we'll ask Karen a little bit about how we as believers can kind of unhinge from any given political party. And Karen also follows the pro-life conversation quite closely. And so I want to get her perspective on some pretty significant events that happened in New York and Iowa last week. So stay tuned. More to come here on Faith Radio Mornings. It is just about 9 minutes after the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and delighted to be joined by Karen Swallow Pryor, a regular contributor to our program. She does a great job teaching English at the Liberty University and working for the Religious Liberty Ethics, just the whole thing with the Baptist Convention. And Karen, boy, I see you all over the news, and it must have been quite something when the New Yorker came to you to do this article.
Yes, it was something. It was a little bit frightening to be so exposed to the national and secular media, but the journalists did an excellent job of on-the-ground reporting, coming and visiting me and staying with me and coming to my classes. This is definitely not fake news. This is the kind of journalism that costs money and is thorough and is the kind of stuff that we should all strive for in our reading and our writing.
Yeah, certainly it's nice to get a break from some of the ways in which things are often distilled down on social media that just don't really represent the entirety of a situation. An interesting article, I know it's titled, That Conservative Evangelicals Attempting to Disentangle Their Faith from Trumpism. So from that headline, tell us a little bit about what the journalists were working with and some of your perspectives on this.
Sure. And of course, I mean, like most headlines, is a little bit clickbaity. That's just how the world works.
Of course.
The story just profiled me as someone who is a conservative evangelical Christian, who is pro-life and pro-biblical marriage, and yet has, you know, wants to not have the church and the Christian faith so entangled in politics that, you know, we're willing to just go with any a person, whether it's the president or anyone else, rather than with principle. And I see that is what's happening, I think, and I think it's, you know, it's watering down the gospel, watering down the Christian message, and these are some hard lines to draw and some tricky needles to thread, and we can certainly have plenty of room for disagreement, but for me it's been very instructive because I, for many years, was someone who was very very politically involved and interested in thinking that politics was going to solve our cultural problems, and I just don't think that anymore.
So how does a believer who has allegiance to the kingdom, Karen, kind of walk this out, knowing that the political sphere does have power socially to create sort of a landscape in our country in terms of our ethics and our morals? What is the role of a Christian's engagement with government in terms of not just wedding itself to a political party, but being actively involved? It seems like that's a pretty tricky conversation.
It is, and I think the thing that helps me the most is having a better and more intentional awareness of the global church. I think especially as Americans, we not just as Christian Americans, but as Americans in general, because we're the leading world power, we tend to see everything through American eyes, and we tend to think that whatever is happening in America is all that there is. So even as Christians, I think we forget that there are Christians all over the globe living in very different kinds of circumstances, and they need to be faithful to the same Christian principles that we need to be faithful to. And then in our particular situation, because we are in America, we are in a democracy, of course, we have rights and responsibilities that other Christians don't have, and we need to steward them well. But those always are secondary to the things that unite us as Christians across time and across the globe.
Well, Karen, this article is really interesting, and as you mentioned, it puts some of your life on display, which is not always the easiest thing, obviously, to see it all in print. And again, if you're listening this morning, it's a great article on Karen Swallow Pryor in The New Yorker. Highly recommend just searching for New Yorker and finding that article. And Karen, it kind of chronicles your journey a bit. You have been in very conservative environments. You've been in more liberal environments. And what are sort of your takeaways from each side of this that maybe is helpful, but how could we also learn across these spectrums?
Being in those very diverse environments my whole life has helped me be someone who wants to build bridges, who wants to understand. And I think I am not afraid to hear other points of views and discuss other people and their opinions and their views and learn from them and have no fear of my own wavering from the truth or from my beliefs or principles. And I see that so much among Christians. They just seem to be afraid of other people, afraid of hearing different points of views, when we should be the ones who are the most confident, and because we have, you know, the truth on our side. We have you know, we have scriptures to stand on. We certainly don't understand things perfectly and have much room to grow and learn. But if we're in pursuit of the truth, that's the most important thing. And I don't see the liberal secular world as having that particular goal in mind. We should be the ones seeking the truth and therefore the ones most confident in learning and growing and hearing other people.
And Karen, you're involved in the media on a regular basis in a variety of ways, whether it's writing or being on shows like this. And one of the things that over these last 7 months being on the program that I've seen is how many voices there are out there now in the culture, all demanding our attention. It's tough for, I think, many people to distinguish the difference between things that are authoritative and credible versus that which is viral. We sort of associate the two being in the same plane. And how can Christians continue to suggest the kinds of things that you're talking about, a bit of a middle road here? Because I've seen some stats recently that Americans really do want to come back together, and they're tired of being driven to either side by so many of the social media conversations. Is there hope that some of the conversations you want to have about this won't just get swallowed up, but could actually chart a different course for us?
Oh, that's, we could talk for an hour about this. A couple of things. I would say if you're on social media, make sure you're not in an echo chamber. Make sure that you are following and listening to people who have different points of view and engaging in discussions with others of different points of view. But I would also say please make sure that social media is not the main input of news or information or conversation in your life. I retweeted a graphic last week that someone had. I don't know where it came from. It was brilliant. That was kind of like a pyramid with the Bible on the bottom, and then the church, the next layer, and then our community, our family, then our community, and the very, very, very tippy top, social media. And the wording was something along the lines of, you know, if only this was the way, you know, that our the input in our lives was weighted. And I think for so many people, it's the other way around, and it distorts our perception of what's real and what's really going on. We need to really emphasize our church, our family, our community, our neighbors, and social media just needs to be something that we dabble in and not where we get the bulk of our perception and understanding shaped.
Now, and as I appreciate you bringing up the idea of the echo chamber, I look back over the last maybe 10 years or so, Karen, and especially with the advent of sort of news slash commentary that is maybe CNN or Fox News. And I have a doctorate. I'm supposed to be semi-smart. At least that's what I would have thought. But I'm amazed at how subtly I get shaped by the news programming that I watched. I watched CNN for a good long season and found myself thinking along some of those lines. I've done the same thing with Fox News. And there is that we need to disentangle ourselves from any given source to really be thoughtful about this kind of stuff.
Absolutely. And just, you know, as much as possible, interact with our flesh and blood, real life neighbors and family members.
Well, I'd be curious to get
subscribe to newspapers.
Pay
a little bit of money to get, you know, get news sources that are quality.
And I think that's so, and it just doesn't take that much time. I know sometimes we don't think we have a lot of time, but I know that one of the delights of doing this show is I'm forced to read more news than I would have maybe in the past, and to read from different perspectives, different angles. Of course, newspapers are going to have a bit of their slant and bias, but to go across the spectrum is really an interesting process.
Right. It's very, very helpful and very formative.
It's the voice of Karen Swallow-Pryor joins us regularly here on Faith Radio Mornings. And Karen, when we come back, there's quite a few headlines in terms of some of the abortion conversation in our country, that coming out of New York as well as Iowa. And I know you followed this for a while, and I would love to get your take on that next on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings here at about 20 minutes past the top of the hour, and we're talking with Karen Swallow-Pryor about some of the different social conversations of our day, including unwedding ourselves from a certain political party as we give allegiance to the kingdom. And Karen, part of obviously the political conversation for as long as I can remember has been Roe versus Wade, abortion, pro-life, pro-choice. It's been around ever since I can remember growing up in the 1980s, and a pretty interesting situation happening moving forward in our country. There's some events out of New York City as well as Iowa in terms of different legislation that's happened. How you followed this for a while. What has been some of your takes on some of these events?
Well, of course, as you said, Roe versus Wade has been sort of the big touchstone in the abortion in the pro-life movement since it was ruled 46 years ago. And it does look like now I think everyone is anticipating the fall of Roe versus Wade with a change in the makeup of the Supreme Court. And that's exactly why New York State acted, you know, ahead of time in establishing some of the most liberal laws in the country, I think in anticipation of the fall of Roe versus Wade. And that is what will happen if Roe versus Wade is overturned. Then all of the regulations will return to the states as it was before then, unless a new ruling changes the Constitution and gives the right to life to unborn children universally. I mean, that's, of course, what would be ideal, and maybe it will happen someday in the future. I actually think that it will. I just don't know how long it will take. And as discouraging as this news from New York is, and just to briefly explain, there's been a lot of confusion about it. They have legalized abortion up to the moment of birth for any reasons related to the life or the health of the mother, and health is something that's pretty loosely defined. And so even though late-term abortions are the rarest of them, abortion is so frequent in our country that there are still many of them that are performed. But I see this ruling as possibly just kind of a last gasp at abortion, and I hope that the response to it will be so strong, and that we finally recognize abortion for what it is. I mean, perhaps this law goes too far, and it will awaken the sleeping consciences of our country. It seems like that's happening. I hope it does.
Yeah, and maybe part of that, too, I think some of the debate we've had on abortion in our country is that it gets framed as being pro or anti-female or pro or anti-women, depending on which side you fall on this. But I've seen some of the work that you've done that I really appreciate is that there can be an acknowledgement in addressing the really poor, awful treatment of women in our country over so many years, sometimes religiously, sometimes politically. But we can have that conversation independent of the abortion conversation. Those are two different things. They don't have to be fused together in this. It's understandable, perhaps, but I appreciate that you're trying to carve out a middle way in some of this.
Well, and of course, I mean, if we want to save the lives of the unborn children, then we have to reach the women who are carrying them. And so often abortion is chosen because of either direct pressure from the father or the family, or indirect pressure, or just a lot of the conditions that make our society less friendly to children and to families.
And with that part of the conversation, too, in terms of you're referencing the states maybe starting to put some policies in place on the abortion conversation, if it moves from the federal to the state level where states can have the choice to do so, that may potentially divide up our country just that much more. I mean, we might even see some migration, according to somebody's political stance on this issue, moving to a different state that they feel is more friendly to them from a policy standpoint.
And, of course, we aren't going to return exactly to the pre-Roe conditions, because travel was, you know, was not as easy 50 years ago. And I think now many more people will cross state lines. So even though there might be this fracturing, I think that there's more of an opportunity for us to learn from the other states and follow their examples. And that's why it's important for us as pro-lifers to seize this moment and be the example that is life-affirming and that shows how much we cherish all life, not just unborn life, not just at birth, but from womb to tomb, as we are wont to say, and to be bold and prophetic, but also ministering to the needs and to be positive about life, because it's not just the unborn children who are vulnerable. There are many others out there who are as well.
Karen, we have about a minute left or so. I'd just be curious your thoughts, too, as we're looking into the future of this. And we've had, obviously, multiple marches on either side of this conversation the past 10 days or so. What is the role, if people want to get active in the government in these kinds of ways? Do marches really help? Is it signs? Is it protesting, calling your congresspeople? Is it praying? How do you approach this from a Christian standpoint in the political sphere?
I think all of those things help. And we can't do everything. So I think whatever, you know, your personality and passion is, the marches help bring attention to the issue. Contacting legislators does. On the ground work, ministering to women in local crisis pregnancy centers, and your own neighbors and your own school and work policies, perhaps, that would affect the lives of those in a crisis pregnancy. All of those are things that will help this, you know, help our society grow to be more life-affirming.
Well, Karen, thanks so much for the work that you do, for standing in the gap. I'm sure it's not easy in many different ways, but I just really appreciate you being on the forefront of this conversation.
Thank you so much.
We'll take a break here for some Breakpoint as well as bottom of the hour news. And when we come back, we'll be joined by Dr. David Aikman, who is our foreign affairs correspondent. And boy, there's a lot to get to out of Venezuela and China and Brexit with David Aikman. So stay tuned for more to come on Faith Radio Mornings. Boy, sometimes I find it hard to walk that balance, being encouraging and keeping our eyes fixed on the kingdom with some of the troubling headlines like this out of New York that was just covered by Breakpoint and our previous guest, Karen Swallow Pryor, referencing it as well. Tough to see the celebration of just the idea of late-term abortion and where we are in just such a difficult time as our country. I know that the governor Cuomo there said this is about the health and safety of the mother, and it's always been the point where the conservatives wave the flag. They want to roll back Roe versus Wade. And then he says this is not gray here. It's black and white. And boy, it's troubling when you have people on either side of this conversation seeing it black and white. And boy, it's the life of our children and our country and what we see. It's hard to know where we're going to go from here, but what we can do is continue to pray. And as Karen Swallow Pryor said, we can reach out, we can help people in crisis, all of these different things that we need to do as believers in the kingdom. So let's keep stepping forward together in all of this and some of these troubling times. Dr. Gary Stratton joined us last Friday on Faith Radio Mornings, and he was talking a bit about how our perspective can be shaped about God through our prayers.
I would tell the listener to keep seeking the Lord. Like, this is such a precious time. You look back and see that it's one of the most wonderful times in your life, but it doesn't feel that way at the time. It was 7 years ago this spring that I remember I decided to give up prayer for Lent. That might sound really unspiritual, but what I realized is that I was praying an hour a day, but it was so much about me and asking what I wanted to eat or what I wanted for other things. And I just said, what I meant by giving a prayer is I'm just not going to ask you for anything for 46 days of Lent. But I kept praying. I kept meditating on scripture. I kept singing worship songs, taking long walks, going up to the top. Like, I learned to connect with him with an intimacy I had never imagined possible.
Love Gary Stratton's voice. He's so helpful on so many different levels. Hallie, my wife, and I had some conversations with him off air yesterday as part of a conference call. He and his wife, Sue, are just involved in so much good work. One of those old souls that can see things through the lens of historical Christian perspective. If you want to catch all of what Gary had to say last Friday, just head to our website at myfaithradio.com and look up The Morning Show. See all of what he had on that segment. Well, up next, we'll be joined by our Monday guest, our foreign affairs correspondent, Dr. David Aikman, who wrote for Time Magazine for a number of years as part of a Godspeed Magazine project. Now, David and I are going to talk about the significant civil unrest going on in Venezuela.
Well, traditionally, January is the month when we make resolutions to live better, eat better, turn over a new leaf. So now that we're nearing the end of the month, how are you doing with all those promises? Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. On New Year's Day, you might have dreamed about making this a better year for your family. You wanted to take time for family dinners. Maybe you decided to give your teen a little bit more responsibility. It's common to arrive 3 weeks later, miles away from your good intentions. Hey, this parenting thing isn't a one resolution thing. Start over today. In fact, start over every day. You can choose right now to spend time with your family, to encourage responsibility, and to do whatever necessary to help your family grow strong.
Looking for more parenting wisdom? Go online to parentingtodaysteens.org or search for Parenting Today's Teens in your favorite app store.
My name is Bond, James Bond.
I always love that intro. That means Dr. David Aikman joins us to talk about some of the events happening around our world from a distinctly Christian standpoint. And David, we're here in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and around the Midwest in the United States, kind of whining about the weather and, of course, the wind chills with winds at about 20, 30 miles an hour these days. That's a pretty calm day in the British Isles where you are, isn't it?
Well, yes, it's gotten a little colder in the last 3 or 4 days, and I suspect we're going to have a fairly cold February, at least, be called by Irish standards, not by your standards.
I know you and Paul were talking off the air about some of the weather here, and you quipped back, would you rather be in Venezuela right now? To which the answer is a decided no, Dr. Aikman. There's quite a bit of unrest happening in Venezuela right now, isn't there?
There is indeed a lot of stuff going on, and there's going to be more to come. So we'll have to wait and see what happens.
what is sort of the heart and of the civil unrest that's taking shape? But it doesn't really relate to socialism. I know that I've read quite a bit about it, and it seems like Venezuela once was a very prosperous nation, but when it moved much more towards a socialistic kind of mindset, that a lot began to fall by the wayside. Is that too simplistic? Is there a lot more going on there than that?
No, I don't think it's simplistic. I think the Chavez regime, and after that the Maduro regime, stuck to the ideological cliche that the way to make a country prosperous is to steal from the rich and give it to the poor. But if you do that, you rob the very people who are producing the productivity that's useful for your whole society. And so it was mismanaged. It was absolutely riddled with corruption. The regime itself was very corrupt. And the basic functions of a normal economic activity, buying and selling, getting supermarkets stocked with food and so forth, just completely collapsed. And it's tragic.
And Dr. Aikman, when we think about this from the perspective of world history, that even if there's some ideology within socialism that may be worth looking at and attending to, it almost always seems like it gets colored significantly by corruption among the leadership and power. I can't think of any example where that corruption didn't happen when so much control was given to the government.
Well, can you think of any socialist society which has created wealth at all? None of them have. The only societies that actually grow and produce higher incomes for their people are societies based on principles of capitalist economics. That just seems to be a fact of life. So the socialism, although it claims to be idealistic and wanting to help poor people, is actually a way not only of ruining the economy, but of ruining society because of the degree of control that it imposes on all societies.
I know one of the critiques of capitalism that we're seeing quite often from certain segments of academia and other political parties, Dr. Aikman, is the idea that it creates income gaps between the rich and the poor. And in terms of that critique, is that going to be part of what just has to be navigated with capitalism, but it isn't necessarily something that we should throw out the baby with the bathwater and move towards more of socialism?
No, I think that's always been a challenge to capitalism. And that's why you have left-leaning parties, which are actually good political instruments. I mean, I think you should always have people standing up for those whose incomes are at the lower end of the spectrum and deciding where government spending should be, particularly on matters of education and access to government jobs and so forth. But nevertheless, if you have socialism, you need so many controls to get everybody to do what you're trying to get them to do that it absolutely ruins any spontaneous creative activity in the society and in the economy.
And boy, when you read about some of the standards of life and what people are having to deal with in countries like Venezuela or some of these other countries, certainly the socialist experiment doesn't seem to have worked terribly well. In fact, it's created havoc in people's lives to the point that now we're seeing a pretty significant humanitarian crisis in the Central American countries. And now we're talking about mass migration, and it's creating more havoc just outside of these countries themselves. It's starting to get to be almost a global crisis.
Well, not only have you had 10% of the Venezuelan population going abroad, but you've had a significant loss in the average weight of a Venezuelan citizen. I think something like 9 kilos or maybe more than that. People have not been able to get meat or nutritious foods that provide them with energy and so forth. And so the collapse of the basic economic functioning of providing food to the population has been catastrophic. And that's why I think it was correct of the United States to bring this up as basically a threat to possibly a humanitarian crime by the government in failing to minister to the nation's needs.
And Dr. Aikman, is there, from just, again, a historical standpoint, is there policy that seems to be more effective in these situations, more so than others? And what I mean by that, is it been helpful for more perhaps prosperous nations like the United States to be more interventionist in countries like Venezuela to help create a better society there? Is it better to take the hand off the plow? Is it better to welcome the immigrant? I mean, how do we understand this? It just seems like, how does something like this get fixed? Because these are people's lives that are being deeply impacted.
Well, that's a good question. Of course, the danger of intervening by one country in another is that you create resentments and you conjure up images of past interventions by major countries like the United States, especially in Central America, which you consider to have been a disastrous error. But there are cases where the intervention of stronger countries that are better run have actually benefited the populations that they have taken over. So I think we ought to consider that some kind of intervention by any force that introduces proper governance into the country of Venezuela would be a great blessing and benefit. That's why they, so many countries have recognized Juan Guaido, the head of the National Assembly, who proclaimed himself president last week.
Yeah, boy, it's certainly going to be interesting to note in the months ahead again on this topic, Dr. Aikman. When we come back from break, too, let's change the topic. I follow Brexit pretty closely, and certainly we are nearing the late March deadline in which the United Kingdom may crash out of the European Union. So I want to get some updates on that, as well as some of the economic headlines coming out of the Davos summit, and get your take on that here next on Faith Radio Mornings. Boy, I don't know, Dr. Aikman. Paul Perreault is picking out some music this week. This is my last go-around with you here in this particular role as Faith Radio Mornings host. So he's picking some sort of sappy, sentimental James Bond song to chronicle the moment between the two of us.
Well, I rather like that intro musical lead. That reminds me of several very enjoyable 007 movies that I remember seeing.
I love it. It's one of my favorites. I appreciate the time we've had together over these 7 months and some of the topics we've talked about. I'd love getting your take on, including what's happening in Brexit. It seems like it's a completely fluid situation day to day, and it's hard to know which trajectory is going to win out the day at the end of this whole situation.
That's true. I mean, poor old Theresa May did her best, but she got an agreement that was completely, resoundingly rejected by her own parliament. Parliament then imposed restrictions on the government, requiring that any decision they made subsequently regarding the whole Brexit process would have to be approved by parliamentary vote. And so now you've got a situation where there's some various amendments coming up, one of which, probably the most prominent, is to delay the process of getting out. In other words, to suspend the date of March 29 for a longer period so that there can be more negotiations with the European Union on the actual procedure. Now, people always think that it's the UK that's, you know, in the soup in this. And, of course, British politics has been pretty obscure in the last several months and maybe 2 years or so. But the fact is that the European Union itself needs to have Britain's trading partnership as much as the British need the EU stuff. So there are people on both sides, German car makers, for example, really want to resolve this Brexit process so that they can begin to to be sure that they can export their cars to the UK market.
Well, and we see that they have been holding the World Economic Forum at Davos, which happens each year. And the United States have not participated this year like they have in the past. But we are now, see, this is the first time we've had a forum like this where we've seen Brexit take shape. We've seen more of the protectionist policies of the United States and tariffs. We see the economy in China. What were some of the headlines coming out of the World Economic Summit that you saw?
Well, I think one of the most interesting ones is the suggestion by the French Minister of Finance that there should be a cap on optimal tax levels for business in all of the advanced capitalist G7 countries. That's one thing. The other thing that's emerged is that China is really on the defensive because its own growth rate has suddenly slipped after seeing rates of growth up to 7 or 8% annually for 30 years, it suddenly plunged in 2018 to 6.6%. Well, most countries in the world would be quite grateful for a 6.6% growth, but the expectation of China's growth has been viciously disappointed by this result, and people are now saying that the Chinese economy is really in a double bind of reduced growth rates, over indebtedness to foreign countries, and even a deficit in some of its foreign trade. So China is a real challenge in the economic system of the globe.
And my understanding, Dr. Aikman, is that China has not really spent maybe as much as they would have needed to build out a sustainable middle-class infrastructure so that their economic reality can be at least sustained internally as a country. They really are export-based still to this day. And when we see tariffs, when we see changing consumer habits in the next generations that maybe aren't quite as consumptive as past generations, it really does put the entire situation at risk for China.
It does. I mean, I don't think the Chinese economy is basically at risk of imploding, as some observers do. But I think it puts a real crimp on their hopeful pattern of being able to continue this sort of unpunctuated expansion that they've been on for 4 decades. This is the first time it's been a serious slowdown, and they're not quite sure how to deal with it.
We have about a minute left here, Dr. Aikman. I'd be curious your take on the United States and China trade situation. I know as of the 1st of March that they're talking about having to institute some more significant tariffs. It's been a temporary stay for the past 90 days or so. Is there any progress on that front in the conversations between the United States and China?
Yes, I do. I think there is, in this case, people on both sides, including Trump in the United States, really wants to avoid an all-out trade war with China. And I think they will find some mutually face-saving compromise that enables them to avoid continuation of a classic tit-for-tat artillery barrage between the two trading nations. So I don't think we're in for a trade war in the future. I think they will resolve this.
Well, I certainly have enjoyed my time with you, as I already mentioned here today, Dr. Aikman. I know when I travel about in local churches and different environments, you're often referenced as a favorite here on Faith Radio. So thanks for all the time that you spend looking through these issues and spending time with us on these mornings like that.
Well, Peter, thank you so much for having me on, and I've enjoyed very much our weekly conversation.
Well, I certainly won't be the last time. Look forward to the next time we have a chance to chat. And we'll wrap up here our second hour of the show and preview tomorrow's show as well for Faith Radio Mornings. Thanks for listening. And as always, looking forward to tomorrow's show. It's going to be awfully cold in the Midwest, but we'll get started with Tommy Binion in the morning out of the Heritage Foundation. And before we run today, Paul Perreault, you talked to David Aikman into getting some Bond music in there. That was a pretty good move on your part.
No, I didn't talk to him about that. I just figured it would be perfect. I went through the Bond themes, and I thought that's probably the best one because You know, View to a Kill would have a really bad connotation.
It was great. Well, I'll tell you what, having his James Bond voice reflect on his love for James Bond was one of the highlights of today. Thanks for listening, everybody. Again, the tomb is empty. Remember, we're part of a kingdom that knows no end. There is always hope and always future. We'll catch you tomorrow morning.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.